So the first lesson I'm going to give you is one that I hope you take with you, because I get a $1,200 reminder every month about this lesson. You see, I live in California and I have a storage unit full of notes, banker's boxes of notes from undergrad, law school, business school, Tony Robbins, Wayne Dyer, Bob Proctor, you name it, I have notes from it, because I was one of those people that wrote down everything. I just kept writing and writing, oh, this is interesting, this is interesting. And I found that there's two types of people, those people like me that want to end up with a whole bunch of banker's boxes of notes that they never can get to or learn from, or there's the other people that don't write down anything, and then we have problems remembering, reminding, and recollecting with our source why that was important to us. So the first lesson I love to teach as a daily practice is to only write down or capture things that resonate with you. I know you have been learning about intuition. Intuition has no time. Intellect works within the construct of time. Inspiration actually has no time. But intuition tells you one of two things. I really agree with that for some reason. If it resonates with you, write it down. But recently I also found some great value, maybe because of the politics in America, that if something resonates with me because I seriously disagree with it, I also write that down. In fact, I pay more attention and give intention to the things that seem to be intuitively disagreeable to me, because I know I'm part and parcel of everything. So if something has an extreme feeling to it, I want to capture it and know that within the context of infinite time, this information is going to be important to me. Not today, right? A lot of people, if you ever play craps, I love those people. They think intuition works within a 24-hour time frame, right? They think hard eight. They think the next roll is going to be hard eight. No, it's working with the infinite time. Sooner or later, hard eight may come up because your intuition is telling you, but it has nothing to do with time. So I want you to listen to the stories and the lessons that resonate with you. Either you agree with them and feel something or disagree with it. Write it down. Pay attention and give intention to it. It'll serve you well in your divine time, your infinite time with your human experience. And I'm going to start talking about the human experience so that we can take advantage of that infinite experience, the divine time that we all live in, for a bigger purpose, greater passion, even profitability. Because it's your purpose that needs always to be greater than your pain. If your purpose is greater than your pain, you will not lack commitment. And it's not the mistakes that you've made. And you'll hear my story. I've made a lot of mistakes, but I never lack commitment. Daily commitment to practicing the right behaviors to get me to where I want to be or better, in a divine direction. Allowing those detours as well to be divine, and allowing divine time to reveal to me, to elevate my awareness, my frequency, my vibration, to understand how this terrible thing that happened could possibly be promoting me, protecting me, and loving me. And so I have lived in three different worlds. I was born, like many of you, I'm sure, in a world of not enough. I grew up in Akron, Ohio. If that wasn't challenging enough, I had a single mom with six kids, five boys and one girl. My mom was a second grade teacher who packed our dinners in paper bags to fill up turnstiles at convenience stores with greeting cards just so we could eat. And sometimes we had to use food stamps to eat. And some of you who may have relatives that are teachers, first responders, United States veterans, people who give everything away but take less back, my mom would actually use our food stamps at times to buy pencils for her class because the school couldn't afford pencils. My mom was one of the most generous, kind, still is, people that I know. Sorry if I get choked up. I'm still a 56-year-old mama's boy. My mom, like many of your parents, thought there was only one way out of this situation, which was education. So she thought the fetus wasn't fully developed till after graduate school. She would often remind me, doctor, lawyer, or failure, again and again. All my siblings, All my siblings are extremely successful. All went to the Ivy Leagues, graduated summa cum laude, extreme academics, something I didn't really enjoy, but I always say I wish athletically I was born with the same skills, knowledge that I was in academics because I didn't have to try to get straight A's. But I really didn't enjoy academics through my life. I just wanted to make my mom proud. And most importantly, I wanted to make a lot of money. The only thing I wanted was to get rid of the only pain in my life, which was when we had a financial problem. Car broke down, oven broke down, summer camp, anything my mom couldn't afford, I'd catch her crying. And I say to myself, I'm going to be so sorry. Thank you. I said to myself, I'm going to be rich. I'm going to buy my mom a house. I'm going to solve all these financial difficulties, and never again will my mom cry because I was going to make happiness with that money. And so, like many people, I thought money would buy me and complete my happiness. So everything I did was to figure out how I could make a lot of money. Now, being young, the first decision I make was a bad one. I thought the way I would make money was to be a professional football player. Thanks for not laughing. There you go. It's okay. You're not going to hurt my feelings. And I was one of those kids. I carried a football with me everywhere I went. Everybody told me I couldn't play football in Pop Warner. I started. They said I couldn't play in high school. I was all state. They said I could never play in college, and I did. And my very first game in college, by the way, people ask me, how did your mom raise six kids, five boys and one girl, and all of them so successful with no money? Two secrets of being a parent. One, she woke us all up at 5 a.m. 7 days a week. She gave us her blessing to do whatever we wanted if we could stay up. So I was the kid in high school sleeping on the couch wanting to party but ending up with a four-letter word on my forehead because I couldn't stay awake. So still, I wake my kids up at 5 a.m. every day, 7 days a week. The second one is something you probably wouldn't imagine, but my mom was a black belt in the martial arts. She was a third degree black belt in the martial art of Jewish guilt. Two great secrets of being a parent. Wake them up early, use guilt to the best of your ability to get them to do what you want, as long as you're a good parent. So I go to college, and I remember my very first, I was the fastest one on the team, but also, of course, the smallest. I weighed about 147 pounds, and probably why I was so fast. I was so light. But I remember thinking to myself, I was on the kickoff team. Well, this is it. I'm going to show everyone, all these naysayers in the world, because my mom always said, think about what you want. She made me read Think and Grow Rich. And by the way, last week I was appointed the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute, and I'll be revitalizing this book, Think and Grow Rich. So if you haven't read it, please read that book. And my mom said, you got to think what you want, not what you don't want, not what you don't have, and definitely not what other people want for you, but what you want. And I wanted to be a multimillionaire by playing football, and there I was in college. Nobody thought I could do it, and sure enough, we kicked the ball off. I'm the first one down, and I lay into the ball carrier. And I thought to myself, this is it. And the next thing I know, I'm flying backwards, land on my back, and the ball carrier actually stepped on me and kept running. I remember lying on my back at 18 years old thinking, doctor, lawyer, or failure. I changed my plan. That pain didn't stop me, though. My plan now was to be a doctor, make a lot of money, buy my mom a house and a car, and solve all of the misery, financial stress in my life. And my oldest brother was already a doctor. I went to go visit him, and I walked into the hospital, and he said, what's the matter, buddy? I said, I hate hospitals. He said, Dave, you're pre-med. God knows you're not going to be a professional football player. What do you mean you hate hospitals? I go, well, I'm not going to be a doctor like you. I'm going to be a sports doctor. I'll be on sidelines and locker rooms. I don't need to be in the hospital. And this is when he gave me the best advice probably I've gotten. He said, David, you need to be more interested than interesting. He said, you need to be more interested than interesting. There's a lot to unpack in being more interested because it's not just wisdom that you gather by being interested. It's actually faith. And it's wisdom and faith that will shorten the resistance, the distance of resistance that we create from us in the all-powerful, omniscient, unbelievable source that loves you more than your mom. The all-knowing, infinite, abundant, unified system that you're learning about here in Cancun, this infinite system of power that you're interfering with. And so I decided, wow, if I don't like hospitals and doctors have to be in hospitals, I'll be a lawyer. So being more interested, I wanted to find out what law school graduated the richest first-year law students, because my objective was to be rich, to buy my mom a house and a car and be happy. I found out that Tulane University had the leading admiralty law program, an international program, only school in America that taught civil and common law, international law, and maritime law, and that their first-year graduates that were oil and gas litigators made the most money. Well, that made sense to me. I chose Tulane, graduated close to top of my class, and luckily got a job offer in 1992, for $150,000 plus bonus. And in 1992, that was a lot of money at 24 years old. I knew I'd be able to buy my mom a house and a car, but I also got offered another job in 1992, selling legal research on the internet with the world's largest legal publisher, the ones with the little keys on it on every law program that you'll ever see from now until eternity. I went to my mom where I was about to receive the next most valuable lesson, and I asked her what I should do. Should I be an oil and gas litigator or sell legal research on the internet? Without blinking, my mom, of course, said, David, you need to be a real lawyer. The internet's never gonna last. It's a fad. It'd be the biggest mistake of your life to do anything in the internet. Take the litigation job. I thought about it for about as long as she told me her advice and realized that just because someone loves you doesn't mean they give you good advice. In fact, there's two types of people in the world. There's ignorant people, people who don't know what they don't know. And then there's ignorant people, people that don't know what you don't know. What do I mean by that? Well, there's the ignorant, arrogant people that are obvious. Somehow I became a middle-aged mutant of the internet and have all these millions of followers on Instagram and TikTok. And people are just ridiculous. Those are the arrogant, ignorant people that'll tell me things like I stole gratitude from Gary Vee, or, you know, they'll call me fat. You know, I'm like, round is a shape. I'm in shape. I don't worry about ignorant, arrogant people. But the people that I pay attention to are the people who love me the most, my mom. Because they are ignorant, humble people who love us more than they love themselves. So when they give us advice, they're actually giving us advice out of fear. That doesn't seem like a good way to make a decision, does it? And we often at all ages, we take advice from people who love us the most, but they don't know shit about what they're talking about. They're ignorant. My mom knew nothing about business. She definitely knew nothing about the internet. Although I will tell you, as we have AI today and blockchain and all of these, I laugh because people resist change. The only people I know that like change are wet babies. But the AI situation and blockchain back then on the internet, Justice Scalia told me when I showed him Westlaw, he told me in 1992, David, nobody will ever do research on a computer. You need books. Ignorant, humble people are the most dangerous. Just because someone loves you doesn't mean they give you good advice. 9 months out of law school, I was a millionaire. I bought my mom a house and a car, the first indication that money does buy love and happiness. 2.5 years later, we sold to Thomson Reuters for $3.4 billion. Yeah, I was blessed. But remember, life's about lessons. Lessons keep on coming until you learn them. They will repeat themselves until you learn them. I was convinced now that money would buy me love and happiness because I was super happy. I moved from the world of not enough, that first world, into a world that I called the world of just enough for me. You ever meet those great optimists, everything happens for you type of people? Oh, I was one of those for sure. Sue, I was a toptimist, the top of them. Everything happens for me. Nothing bad happens to me. Everything happens for me. buying Ferraris. I was buying shit that I didn't need to impress people I didn't like. Trading everything in my life. I was a great negotiator. I was trading everything. I'd give to receive. And everything was a trader in a negotiation. And then I was blessed to become the CEO of Samsung's phone division, their data division, in 1999. At 31 years old, I ran what would be the second biggest manufacturer in phones in the world, married to my dream girl from the fourth grade, by the way, still married today. Yeah. I met her in the fourth grade. At sixth grade camp, I was too afraid to ask her to go steady. That means date, I guess, if you're young. My kids didn't understand what steady was, but I wanted to go steady. I asked my best friend at sixth grade camp to ask her, and she said, no, tell him to ask me himself. So he embarrassed me. I threw an egg at her, hit her in the back of the head, and then teased her because I was in love with her for years, and she stayed away from me. Her cousin was one of my best friends, and somehow I ended up married to her. And I had everything I ever dreamed of. Running Samsung, it was amazing. Had our first baby, lived in my dream house, dream car, dream plane, dream boat. But I was about to have three red flags that maybe I had a lesson to learn. Maybe money didn't buy love or happiness. And the first lesson came when I was 30 years old. And my dad, who left when I was five, I loved him. He was an amazing guy. His girlfriend was closer to my age than his. He drove a convertible Cadillac. But when I was 10 years old, he blew it. See, he missed my birthday. I was 10 years old, and my hero, my dad, missed my birthday. And it wasn't that he missed my birthday that was so upsetting. It was when I confronted him about missing my birthday at 10 and said, Dad, how could you forget my birthday? And he said, Son, I didn't forget it. I don't believe in birthdays. Now, my dad was a king of bullshit. He was a liar, cheater, manipulator, an overseller, back-end seller. That's why my mom left him when I was five. And I said to him, but Dad, you celebrated your girlfriend's birthday, my sibling's birthdays. When all of a sudden don't you believe in birthdays? That's when I realized I hated my father. At 30 years old, I get a gift from my dad, a big box. First gift I've gotten in 20 years. I was so excited. I opened it up. It was a sport coat like this. And I started to cry. And my wife said, what's the matter? I said, I think my dad wants to have a relationship with me. He gets it. It fit me perfectly, which isn't easy if you look like this. So he obviously took the time to find out my size. And then I opened it up to see if it said, especially made for David Meltzer's birthday or Armani. But instead, he had torn out all the lining in the pockets in the jacket. I went from complete bliss and joy back to hate. I called my dad immediately and I said, Dad, I got your present. Oh, good. Happy birthday, son. I said, what do you mean? Why would you give me a jacket that I can't wear? He said, because it's not for wearing. I said, what are you talking about? He said, son, you're just like me. I exploded. I'm nothing like you. You're a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, overseller, back-end seller. I hate you. Son, I don't want you to make the same mistakes that I've made. So I've given you this jacket to remind you, you can't take anything with you. I want you to hang it in your closet every day to remind you money does not buy love or happiness. I wish I was ready to hear what he had to say. Instead, I gave him the standard 30-year-old answer, F you, Dad, I hate you, bye. 6 years later, I'm running the most notable sports agency in the world, Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment. Warren Moon had just gotten into the Hall of Fame. He was my business partner in the firm. Later, we would start Sports One Marketing together, a global sports marketing company. I was doing business as a multi-millionaire with my heroes and my dream job, thinking I had every single thing I've ever dreamed of. But the truth was, I wasn't happy. I had more money than I could dream of. Not only did I have money, but I had access to what billionaires couldn't afford to do. Sidelines at Super Bowl, backstage at the Masters, the Oscars. It didn't matter. I had access to everything. And so 6 years after my dad gave me the jacket, I invited my best friend, Rob, the guy who asked my wife to go steady for me, we were still very close friends, big sports guy, said, hey, come to the Masters with Joe Montana, Wayne Gretzky, and Warren Moon. NetJets wants this whole Canadian superstar thing. I want you to come on the private jet to the private party, go backstage in the cabins at the Masters, come with me, everything's on me. And my best friend Rob looked at me and said, no. I'm like, Rob, I'm taking care of everything, bro. You're coming. No, I don't want to go. Why not? He said, because I don't like who you hang out with, and I definitely don't like what you're doing. You're going to end up dead, and I don't want to see a part of it. I looked right at him with tears in my eyes. I'm like, F you, what are you talking about? I'm not doing what those other guys are doing. He said to me, stone cold, you can lie to me, David, but stop lying to yourself. You're going to end up dead. I gave him that standard answer again, second red flag, same response, F you, I hate you, you're not my friend. Walked away, tears in my eyes, because I knew he was right, and I knew he was telling me the truth. 2 weeks later, my life would change forever, which is where these five daily practices came from. 2 weeks later, I asked my wife if I could go to the Grammy Awards with Little John. He's a rapper. Most people may know him for the Pepsi commercials. Yeah, yeah. That's my boy. And he invited me to the Grammy Awards. He was receiving one. And I asked my wife if I could go. She said to me, I don't think so. You're not paying attention to your work. You're partying way too much, and you're not paying attention to the family. I think you need to stay home and take a check on yourself. So, of course, I lied to her, went to the Grammys, came home 5:30 in the morning, a complete disaster. And there she was waiting for me in our beautiful French doors with all those there. I could see her 5-foot silhouette. I opened the door and she said very frankly, I'm not happy. I'm leaving. I need you to take stock in who you were and what you want to become. I also, as I get choked up, remember saying, if your mother knew who you really were, if she knew who you really were, what would she say? I immediately gave her the standard response that night. I hate you. I remember walking like this. Who do you think did all of this? Who do you think gave all of this to you? I'm going to take it all away. How dare you talk to me? And I went to bed. I woke up in the morning full of hate. I hated my mom, I hated my dad, I hated my best friend, and I even hated my wife. And as I sat there thinking how I could steal their joy, their happiness, by taking everything away from them, I looked over in the closet, and the first time in years, what do you think I saw? I saw what God wanted me to see. This jacket. I looked at the jacket, and I said to myself, man, you don't hate your mom. You don't hate your dad. You don't hate your best friend, and you certainly don't hate your wife. You hate yourself. You are a liar. You are a cheater. You are an overseller, a back-end seller, a liar, and a manipulator. You need to change. And I sat there on my bed crying for almost a day, trying to figure out who I was. I'll tell you who I was. I was someone who was trying to always get more, always try to get what I didn't have, didn't want, or what other people wanted for me. Everything in my life was a trade or negotiation, and money didn't do anything for me other than buy my mom a house and a car. You see, what I learned that day was money doesn't buy happiness and it doesn't buy love, but it allows you to shop. And I was shopping for the wrong things, for the wrong reason. If you shop for the right things for the right reason, you will be happy, and money can help facilitate buying things for the right reason. You saw some of those pictures. In the last 18 years, I've been living my life in a divine direction, understanding divine detours and knowing divine time. And we've donated 2 community centers, 17 villages. I'm spending my money, more money than I've ever had, for the right reasons, for the right things. No more Ferraris. No more boats, cars, planes. Not worth it. I shop for the right things for the right reasons. And so what I want to share in the second half are these 5 daily practices the things that allow me over the last 18 years to recover from losing over $100 million, going bankrupt, to everything I ever wanted. Because I learned that day to start the progress towards not living in a world of not enough, not just enough for me, not to me, but through me, a world of more than enough. And the first thing I realized, and still today, that most people don't understand is I was told something that I believe to be true, but they only gave me half of the recipe. Anybody here believe the more you give, the more you receive? Good. I believe everyone has heard that at the very least, and most people I meet believe it. I sure did, and I still do. Here's the problem. Why is it that people like my mom, teachers, first responders, United States veterans, most moms in general, let alone single moms, why do they end up financially with nothing? Because they're the most giving people that I know. They're the most generous people that I know. And yet most of the people that I know that have given their lives for others have nothing financially. So I started to study this, and I realized that most of the religious, philosophical, spiritual, and theoretical texts that I studied actually didn't say the more you give, the more you receive. Most of them say the more you give, the more you're given. Think about that. There's a big difference. The more you give, the more you're given. Given is a responsibility. It's not a trade or a negotiation for giving to receive. You see, you have to use gratitude to find the light, the love, and the lesson so you don't feel punished. When I lost everything, my basement had a basement. 2 years after my wife had me take stock in who I was, I lost over $100 million and went bankrupt. I had to walk to my mom's house to tell her I went bankrupt. Worse than that, I forgot to take my name off my mom's title, so I got the great blessing, the great promotion, the great protection, and the great love of God to tell my mom that she had to move. The only reason I wanted to be rich was to buy her a house, and now I had the blessing of telling my mom I lost her house. And when I did, crying at her door, and I said, "Mom, I'm so sorry I lost everything. You're going to have to move. I lost your house." And she looked at me and said, "Are you okay?" I said, "Mom, I don't think you heard me. I lost your home. You have to move." "Oh, sweetheart, I heard you. Mom, why is God punishing me?" God doesn't punish people. He protects you. He promotes you and he loves you. He's not punishing you. "Mom, I don't believe in God." She looked at me with a smile on her face. She said, "Son, you believe in God. You just believe in the wrong God." And for the last 17 years, I've been practicing giving. But I've elevated my awareness to all that I was given. To this day, I was given more on that day than I've ever been given before. Just like I was given more the day when my wife threatened to leave me that day than I was ever given before, where most people would think they were being punished. So remember, the more you give, the more you're given. But here's where most people fall down. If you're given more, you have to be able and capable and worthy of what? Receiving it. Who here doesn't like to receive? Let's be honest. It's the biggest problem I see out there. Most people live in a zero-sum game, especially the most generous, kind, and giving people. What do? They do what my mom does. "Oh, here's everything. Here's my food stamps to buy your pencils. Here's everything. Oh, can we help you? Can we send your kids to camp? Can we give them a scholarship? Can we let you have our car? Can we do this for..." No, it's okay. God will take care of us. Yeah, that's what he's doing, dummy. Right? We all know that joke. I sent the plane. I sent the helicopter. I sent the SEALs to you. What else can I do? Yes. You're being given, but you have to be worthy of receiving it. Because if you give 100% and take less every time, you're going to end up at zero. I'm going to repeat that. It's math. It's a zero-sum game. If you give more than you receive back, you will end up at zero. It's that simple. You are blessing someone by receiving and blessing yourself. Giving and receiving are one in the context of giving more, to be given more, to receive more. And then if you want to illustrate your faith, and some people get mad at me with this, but I disagree. I live in a world of more than enough of everything for everyone, not in a zero-sum game. It is not scarcity. I live in an omniscient, all-powerful, infinite system of abundance. And because of my faith, I ask for more. Because the math makes sense to me. If I truly believe there's more than enough of everything for everyone, why wouldn't I ask for more? If we went to dinner, six of us, and somehow they started loading up all 10,000 meals on my table, would you feel bad about asking for one? No, you'd be helping me. Why? Because you know now you don't need faith. Shit, this guy has more than enough meals for everyone. More than enough. I'm going to help him out and take some. You got to ask for more. It is truly an illustration of faith that you believe that there is something bigger than you that loves you more than your mom, something omniscient, all-powerful, and all-knowing that has more than enough for everyone. But yet, what do people do? They create resistance because they either don't give because they're scarce, they don't see what they're given because they're scarce, they don't receive because they're scarce, and even more importantly, they don't ask for more. Because if you give more, given more, receive more, ask for more than more, give more than more, be given more than more, receive more than more, ask for more than more than more, you see where I'm going to end up when I'm 80? That's why I'm up here right now. Because I live in the world of more than enough of everything for everyone, and I have no scarce fear that I'm going to have anything but more than enough. Because I keep giving, I elevate my awareness through gratitude and forgiveness of what I'm given, and I feel great about receiving because I know how I feel when I give, and I want to give to you that same feeling because that's happiness. So how do we get there? I'm a very pragmatic person. I know that progress occurs from practice. I've worked in sports a lot of my career, and there's no great athlete that doesn't practice every single day. It is your commitment 7 days a week to practice what you want or better. Behaviors only occur as an energy, like money's an energy. What are the three characteristics of energy? It aggregates, it attracts more like energy. It accelerates, which appeases human nature and human experience, because there's only one time that progress has. It's not fast enough. Just remember that. Progress has only one time zone, one speed, not fast enough. That's the way progress works. Good behavior, believe it or not, is behavior defined by you. Good behavior is behavior that gets you to where you want to be or better, or where you think you want to be or better. What is bad behavior? It's individualized, personalized, and customized as well. It is that which interferes with where you want to be or better. It's behavior that interferes with where you want to be or better. Good behavior, ironically, creates what? Good progress. Bad behavior creates interference to the good progress, or what other would say bad progress. So we have to be conscious of what we're practicing every day. And I'm going to go through five practices that will change your life. And they are simple. But remember, the simple things to do are unfortunately simple not to do. Why? Because you got to do them every day. You saw the video about gratitude, right? Say thank you for 30 straight days, guaranteed to change your life. Say thank you for 30 straight days, guaranteed to save your life, to change your life. Anyone think they can say thank you for 30 straight days? Yeah, everyone raises their hand. It took me 9 months. Because the simple things to do, like saying thank you, which takes 0.1 seconds and it's free, it took me 9 months before I didn't miss a day. That's human nature. So let's talk about these practices. Number one practice in your life. You want to change your life? Start the day by knowing what you want today. Know what you want today according to the circumstances that actually exist today. You see, you're blessed with 24 hours each and every day of your life. I guarantee that you have 24 hours every single day of your life, except for the last day. Every one of us will be cheated, seconds, minutes, or hours, depending on how lucky you are. So know what you want according to the circumstances of today in alignment with where you think you want to be in the future, where you think you want to be in the future. So what do I want personally today, according to the circumstances of today? Am I in Cancun? Are my in-laws in town? Did I have a flat tire? Whatever it is, you have to put it into the context of the human experience because that's what you're having. But we want to reconcile the human experience, which only has one common denominator of all human beings, which is 24 hours. We all have 24 hours. All human beings have 24 hours. And it's the exact same for everyone. It's the time that a particle of light leaves the sun and hits the earth. That's how we determine 24 hours. It's not rocket science, but maybe it was at one time. But that's what we have. So we need to put personally, what do I want today? Experientially, what do I want today? Giving-wise, productivity-wise, what do I want today? And of course, receiving-wise. And they don't have to be balanced. Balance is bullshit. Harmony is what we want. And the only way that we have harmony is to know what we want according to the circumstances of today in a divine direction of where we want to be or better. Where we want to be, not where other people want us to be. You see, there's a huge energy gap, and I want you to take this back to your kids because I got four of them, and they hear it from me every day. There's a huge energy gap between I am and this is what I want people to think I am. You want to go on TikTok? I'll show you a bunch of people that are worried about what people think they are. I know what I am. I am happy, I am healthy, I am wealthy, I am worthy. I'm just trying to figure out what I'm doing to interfere with it. I'm just trying to figure out if I have an omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing source that loves me, protects me, and promotes me more than my mom, I just got to figure out what I'm doing diet-wise, exercise-wise, mindset-wise, heart-set-wise, financially, whatever it is I'm doing to interfere with more than enough of everything that I want. Not what you want for me, not what's missing, and not what I don't have. Create harmony each day according to the context of the day. What are the circumstances of the day? Therefore, I'm working in reality of what I want in a divine direction of what I think I want or better. A trajectory, not attaching my emotions to an outcome that creates resistance. This is what people mean by surrendering or allowing it to happen because I'm only focusing on behaviors that are aligned with where I want to be or better. And then I have a great power to reduce the limitations that people have. There's only two limitations that you have. It's either your imagination, right? You will never overachieve your own self-image. What's that saying? You'll never overachieve your imagination. You'll never overachieve your own self-image. But the one that most people miss is that you are limited by the meaning of your past. I'm going to repeat that. You're limited by the meaning of your past. So everyone has failures, mistakes, defining moments, void shortages, obstacles. They have historical relevances. That one's one of my favorite. You know, I spoke in France at the sports summit and this beautiful French lady said, oh my goodness, what about the French-American War? I'm like, what about the French-American War? How are you allowing that to create some sort of resistance in your life of where you want to be or better? You have given the meaning of the French-American War to stop you from being your best self, your higher self, to connect to God, to source, to something bigger than you that loves you? Why? You have the power to give meaning to everything you see. It takes time sometimes to do so. I never thought I'd stand on a stage and even admit that I lost everything, let alone tell people it probably was one of the greatest things that have happened to me because it has taught me more, protected me more. It saved my life and definitely saved my marriage. That's meaning. May not mean the same thing to you. You may just think I'm the biggest loser in the world. I don't care. What you think about me is none of my business. I can't control it anyway. I give meaning to everything I see. So I take the number one practice with what I want, personally, experientially, giving, receiving, according to the circumstances of the day, in alignment with my divine direction, my purpose, and then I align the meaning of my past, the lessons of my past, to help me get there, not hurt me from getting there or interfere with me from getting there. If you know your what, you will have a mathematical advantage over almost everyone on earth. What do I mean by that? Most people, excuse the visualization because you just had lunch, most people live their lives like tubes. Food in, food out. That's their whole life. They live in nothingness. If you don't want to live in nothingness, I'll tell you a mathematical way. Know your what. The minute you know your what, you have a possibility. Possibility is a mathematical advantage over nothing. Now, how do we take the next step? The second practice is know your who. Why? Because the fastest way to get to where you want to be or better is to help someone get to where they want to be or better, or ask someone that's already there to help you get you to where they are already. That's the fastest way. Find someone that's in the position or situation that you're in. Ask them for directions. They've already paid the dummy tax. I can't tell you how many of my friends left California because of taxes. You know, I know there's a lot of reasons to leave California, but taxes should not be one of them. 12% weather tax, well worth it, by the way. But who cares about taxes when there's the dummy tax that most people are paying? You know, the dummy tax is the most expensive tax there is. It'll cost you everything you have and everything you could have. You know, you don't have to pay it. You can simply ask for help. You can find someone in the situation that you want to be in and ask them for directions. They've already paid that tax for you, or help someone get to where they want to be or better. If you know your who each day, according to the what and the circumstances of the day, your possibility takes another mathematical leap. It becomes a probability, because now you're living in connection with your source, the unified system of everybody helping each other. A community of people, which we are, here to what? Help one another and know people that help one another. And actually, social media helps us with that connectivity. It actually is a positive way to allow 7.6 billion people to know each other and know people that will help each other. To me, that's my whole mission in life of empowering over a billion people. How are you going to do that? Well, I'm going to empower 1,000 to empower 1,000 to empower 1,000. Create a community of people that know and want to help each other and know people that will help each other. Why? Because they buy from each other and sell for each other for life. You show me one company that's not successful if they have a community of people that are buying from them and selling for them for life. Marketing dollars, very low in those companies. Know your who, your possibilities will be a probability. The third daily practice, know your how. Well, considering there's 24 hours in a day, we have to somehow understand how are we going to be productive with our 24 hours each day according to the circumstances of the day, the meaning of the past, and the divine direction, and how are we going to utilize that to be accessible to others and access what we want and be gracious, be able to take all the pain in life and find the light, the love, and the lesson so that our purpose is greater than pain, knowing that we'll never lack the commitment, so we'll never fail because our purpose is greater than our pain every single day. So I break down my 24 hours into two different times. One, negotiable time and non-negotiable time. Non-negotiable time is what I'm committed to every single day, regardless of the circumstances of the day. And so I assign time to that, and I make a commitment to daily do these things, knowing that 90% of my success comes from what I'm committed to doing every single day. It comes from my non-negotiables, not from the variant behavior of negotiables. Variant behavior is what helps human nature accept the fact that we're doing what we don't love to do, which is doing things every single day, which is why the simple things to do are simple not to do, because we don't like to do things every single day. So what are those for me? One, sleep. I changed my dream from being in the Pro Football Hall of Fame into be the Sleeping Hall of Fame. You are looking at one of the world's greatest sleepers. I'm built for it. I can sleep on a plane. I can sleep in a cave, small tent. Doesn't matter. Look at this body. Short legs, long body. I sleep anywhere. I've had a sleep coach for 17 years. Why? Because when I learned the purpose of sleep is to do two things. One, to recover. Those who recover better, perform better. And two, access information in order to transcend for the next day to elevate who I am, my awareness of who I am and what I can be. So I took on a coach to help me, because I travel 200 days a year, recover and access information better than most people on earth. So I put a minimum of 7 hours a day, no matter what the circumstances of my day are, to sleeping with the purpose of recovery and access. Minimum 7 hours a day. So that leaves 17 hours of awake time. Believe it or not, in the 17 hours of awake time, I only use about 3.5 hours for non-negotiable time, leaving me almost 14 hours to do whatever I want every single day when I'm awake. Minimum of an hour a day on my health. Minimum of an hour, regardless of the circumstances. It is a non-negotiable, regardless of the circumstances. If I fail in a non-negotiable, I give myself grace, but I don't let the losses stack up. If I miss something in my non-negotiables, it's not happening tomorrow. It becomes double, super important non-negotiable. I put it first thing in the day. I'm not going to let the L stack. I'm not going to miss my sleep, then miss my workout. Then I spend a minimum of time. You're going to love this one. I spend a minimum amount of time with my family that's most relative to me. Minimum 30 minutes a day, regardless of the circumstances of the day, with my wife. Minimum. Minimum 30 minutes a day with my 14-year-old son, which is becoming really difficult because he's falling into the three-daughter realm of, I spend a minimum of 2 minutes a day with my three daughters who are 25, 23, and 20. Now, I'm one of the world's greatest negotiators. They wrote the book, Lee Steinberg, on negotiation. I wanted 5. They gave me 2. Try negotiating with a teenager. It's like death trap. I don't know. But what does that mean, non-negotiable time? How does this time stack on each other? 2 minutes a day of anything you're committed to do every single day is worth 2 hours on a Saturday. I'm going to repeat that. 2 minutes a day committed every single day is worth 2 hours on a Saturday. I guarantee it. You see, there's this whole facade about the extra mile. If anyone's ever taken math or Spanish, the people who get B's in math and Spanish, they're extra milers. Oh, I studied 16 hours on Saturday. Why did I get a B? But the rare student that studies 15 minutes a day, Spanish or math, guaranteed an A or an A+. Guaranteed. Same thing in life. You spend 2 minutes a day with your teenager, you're guaranteed an A+ as a parent. 2 minutes a day, every day, non-negotiable. Tell them, I tell my kids every single day, I love you, I'm proud of you, and I always have your back. So 3 things my dad never told me. I let them know every day. They're at the age now, they roll their eyes when they hear it. And that's okay with me. Let them know it's coming. Trust me. Because when shit gets tough, that eye roll is going to be right there. Because in the back of their head, they're going to say, my dad loves me, he's proud of me, and he has my back. And they're going to make the right choice. I also tell them no matter what they want to do, they can do it. They just have to do their best, learn lessons, and have fun. That's what you need to do. Do your best in the divine direction, learn lessons, and have fun. It'll happen. It's divine time at the right way, at the perfect time for you. I spend 1 minute a day as I finish up with my non-negotiables to call my mom. You know, I'm a 56-year-old mama boy. I call my mom every single day and I just tell her 3 things. I tell her I'm happy, I'm healthy, and I love her. That's all you got to do. Your relationship will heal with the people that you have the most difficult relationships with. If you just call every single day, text, email, show up, and just let someone who loves you know that you're happy, healthy, and you love them. I promise you, my mom doesn't make me drive an hour to fix a screen door when I'm not very handy. She allows me to pay someone now. Why? Because she knows I'm happy, I'm healthy, and I love her. I don't have to prove it anymore because I call her a minimum of a minute a day. I have healed the relationship with my mom of any of that Jewish guilt or interference that she tries to play anymore. I'm the 3rd degree black belt of gratitude. 4th, daily practice. If you know your what, it's a possibility. You know your who, it's a probability. If you know your how by utilizing negotiables and non-negotiables of time each and every day according to the circumstances of the day, it will become your perspective. But in order to make it your reality, you need to know your now. I call it din-din. Do it now, do it next. 100% of the things you do now get done. It's one of the few statistics that I believe in. The other statistic I believe in, couple, one, 100% of all short putts in golf don't go in. And most importantly, 99% of all statistics are made up. But 100% of the things you do now get done. 100% of the things you do next get done. So there is an antidote for all of us that feel overwhelmed or procrastinate. Anyone here feel overwhelmed or procrastinate? Yeah. Why is it, by the way, we only overthink negative things? I got into the practice of overthinking positive things. Man, this is going to be a great day. I can't get over it. I can barely even sleep. This is going to be such a great day. Holy shit, this is an amazing day. I'm like a freak of nature. Everyone else is going, oh my God, I'm so worried about tomorrow. Worry is a duplicative negative. You're interfering with what you want and you're praying for what you want all at the same time. Anyone that's been in school and says, I hope this question isn't on the exam, you know it's the first question on the exam. No, you're now. Prioritization is the antidote to feeling overwhelmed and procrastination. If you can prioritize your day by knowing what's important to you, of course, using urgency as a subset, but according to what you want, who you can help, and how to get it done, you will know what's important to you today according to the circumstances of the day, the divine direction that you're in, and the meaning you need to give the past, the light, the love, and the lessons you need to learn with wisdom and faith, shortening the distance of resistance. Know your now, it's your reality. Know your what, your who, your how, and your now. Now the big one. Practice number five, the most difficult one. And I know you've been learning about this while you've been here. Most people are in search of their why. That makes no sense to me. Because I know my why because I have faith that I'm part of an infinite, abundant, unified system of thought, protected, promoted, and loved by an omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing God that loves me, protects me, and promotes me. It's that simple. So in what world do I need to search for my why? What I need to learn to do is to apply my why every day, to live intelligently, intuitively, and most importantly, inspirationally, in spirit, with the omniscient, all-powerful, and all-knowing, whatever you define it as. Right, I love people who say, Dave, I'm really not sure what religion you are. I said, neither am I. Well, do you believe in Jesus? I'm like, is Jesus bigger than me and loves me more than my mom? Yeah, sure, why not? This sounds good to me. Jesus, good by me. Why not? Let me tell you, though, we're talking about trauma, pain, fear. I have spent millions of dollars trying to figure out all the trauma in my life. I am a therapist, excuse my language, wet dream. I got lots of money and lots of trauma. Make a good customer. But you know what I learned? Is it's much easier than trying to figure out what you're afraid of, figure out your trauma. There's an instant and obvious practice within applying our why. You know what it is? Identifying how I react to the trauma, react to the fear. Why? Because I will tell you, if you're angry, you know it. If you're worried, you know it. If you had to need to be offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, you know it immediately. You don't need a therapist to tell you you're pissed off. Don't try to resist it. That's the problem. We try to go over it, under it, through it, out logic it, out analyze it. We try to lie to it, cheat it, manipulate it, deny it. There's no need because you have wisdom and faith. So next time you are offended or next time you see the instant and obvious, the resistance between you and the omniscient, all powerful, just stop. Don't resist it. Just stop, breathe, meditate, breathe, recollect, I call it. Remind, remember. What do you think you're recollecting with, reminding with, remembering with? I'll tell you what you're reminding with, recollecting, and remembering with. Your God, your omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing source that loves you, promotes you, and protects you at all time. So just stop, get to center, find your source, and then roll in the right direction. My mom's given me a lot of advice in my life, but the best piece of advice that she gave was, son, if you ever catch on fire, emotionally, physically, spiritually on fire, just stop, drop, and roll. Roll into the divine direction the detours in your life, all the detours in our life are there to protect, promote, and love you. It's an indication that you have a better place to be. Your purpose just needs to be greater than that indication, that pain. And divine time will show you the way, the Tao. It'll show you the omniscient, all-powerful, unified, abundant, infinite system that we belong to. I promise you we're all blessed and we're all one. I know it's not apparent today to all of us, but we have to believe and seek the wisdom and the faith to know our what, know our who, know our how, know our now, but especially apply our why. God bless all of you.